Welcome to Wake Up and Pay Attention, the podcast fueling positive change from the inside out. I'm Mark Robertson, your host. With over 25 years as a professional coach, I'm thrilled to explore the personal growth tools that have helped me and hundreds of people just like you design and awaken to their best life. If you've ever felt overwhelmed and unfulfilled, like you're just going through the motions day after day, maybe you're afraid one day all the balls are going to drop, you're in the right place. Together, let's expand our self-awareness and make sustainable shifts that improve our communication skills, relationships, and overall well-being. This is a judgment-free zone where openness, understanding, and support rule. So grab your headphones and get ready. It's time to wake up and pay attention. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of Wake Up and Pay Attention. I'm excited about continuing this journey with you today and getting into things today. Before I dive into the topic, which today's topic will actually be the third circle of the three circles we've been talking about, the body or our biology, I want to say once again, thank you for the continued feedback. It's been incredible, continues to be incredible. So keep it coming in whatever way you have, text, email, phone calls. I've heard from a lot of folks, so both a lot of positive feedback and some constructive feedback. And so just keep it coming. I'd love to hear it. I want to touch on the constructive a little bit in this sense. Why is feedback important in our lives? It's really been helpful to receive some of those suggestions because I'll harken back to something that I covered, I think, in the second episode around the language claims, which is one of the language claims is you can't change what you don't see. You can't change what you don't see. And so that's really the value of feedback in our lives is, again, there are just sometimes aspects of ourselves that we can't see. And so those who are willing and courageous enough to give us feedback are really helpful in that regard. And so I've gotten some great suggestions on things to add or things to change that would make the podcast better. And so things that I literally didn't see or don't know yet about doing this that were really helpful. So again, keep that coming. To dive into today, I'll start where I seem to be landing on starting, which is where are we headed today? As I mentioned, today's episode will continue to deconstruct the observer that you are that we've been talking about, flexing the big eye muscle. So noticing the smaller observer that you are, which are the three circles, remember? Language, emotion, and body. And so today we'll touch on the final circle, our body or biology. And what I want to cover today will be, first, I really want to talk about there's the temporary coherence of those three that goes together in the moment of language, emotion, and body. But more importantly, in the coaching, where I really work a lot with my clients, especially when they're stuck or wanting to make change in an area they've struggled to, is on the more habitual coherence of those three. So the patterned ways over time, and particularly the habits that they built in their life to become the observer that they are, the habits of thinking, feeling, and moving or acting. So those are the three circles in action. That's your way of being. When I think body, I immediately think habits. And we'll talk about that today as well. So the second thing that we'll look at are what I call embodied habits and the power of those. And I'll give you some examples and from my life and show you the power of our habits. And then the last piece will be to touch on a framework or model at a really high level that the most influential body coach or somatic coach that I've ever had in my life through this journey, Stuart Heller, has given to me in our work together. So I want to give you a high level sense of that, which might equip you with some tools at that point to begin noticing your body different and begin working with it if you so choose. So to get started, remember that we have the three circles, language, emotion, and body. And I want to reiterate the message that when you change one, you at least temporarily change the other two. So when you change your thinking, your internal conversation, or how you speak out loud, at least temporarily, you will shift your emotional state and you will shift your body. We all already sort of naturally and intuitively do this, but I just want to reemphasize the power of that in terms of what we're doing here, which is trying to create change or growth or learning. what we do is we end up noticing, and then we choose to practice differently in any of those areas, and you often will start to see an immediate temporary shift in those. So let's talk about that. I think the first thing that I want to talk about is not so much the temporary shift in those, which can happen quite a bit, but it's really more the habitual, embodied, long-term observer that we become over time. The way our way of being starts to settle in and take shape over time. And I'll start with a story. When I was in high school, we lived in Altus, Oklahoma. I think I told you my dad was in the military. He was in the Air Force. So we were at Altus Air Force Base. And I remember this vividly. One day we were in my friend Mark's house. So interestingly enough, I had two other friends and they were named Mark and Mark. And so it was often a joke at that time, like a hair-lipped dog, Mark, Mark, Mark. But anyway, we were in Mark Wilson's house, and I remember being in his living room. It was the three of us. We were almost like standing in line, and his mother said to me, looked directly at me and said, "Hold your shoulders up." And I was like, "What?" I was like, "I do." And then I looked and I noticed I don't. She didn't say much more. I may have said something, but it was like she had noticed that I tended to slouch, and I didn't even notice that about myself, but it was representative of that coherence that I'm talking about. My coherence at 16 or 17 years old that was already taking shape, and she saw it in my body or posture, had all three of those components. So I'll talk about those now. What was the language component? I, on some level, later identified that I lived in an internal conversation of there's something wrong with me. And I think I alluded to that in an earlier episode. So that private conversation was powerful for me. Ontologically, we call that I had a master assessment or judgment about myself, much like what we would call a core belief that was driving all the other beliefs in my life and driving a lot of my thinking, which was that there was something wrong with me. You can imagine then that the emotion that went along with this was like a mood of inadequacy or hesitation in my life. I would say that at that time, I lacked self-worth, self-confidence, and that was the corresponding emotional state that I lived my life in. And then the body that went with it was what she commented on. I had slouch, rounded shoulders. In a way, my chest was closed. I was sort of curving back upon myself, and I lived that way in life. I held myself back. I was hesitant. In fact, it literally showed up in a lot in school and in other areas of my life. I just didn't speak. I was very quiet. Which is kind of funny now because some of my friends would say it's hard to shut me up at times. I became, I think, a learned introvert due to that relationship with my father and being what I felt was being made wrong or judged and invalidated all the time. I learned to be quiet. That was safe. Whereas now I realize I'm pretty much a natural extrovert and draw energy from being with people, being in conversation, engaging. So I'm much more vocal these days. But then that body went with that language and that emotion. And so that's what I want you to understand with regard to that became my day in, day out, long-term coherence, the habitual observer that I was. So I want to shift gears now in the second part and really talk about, as I mentioned earlier, when I think of the body, I immediately think of the word habits. And so I call them a lot these days when I work with my clients, embodied habits. How deeply embodied or deeply entrenched are your habits in life? And what I mean by that is literally not just habits from the actions that you take, but habits of all three of these circles. How habitual or entrenched have you become in your beliefs, your internal conversation, your thinking about yourself and others in the world, your speaking? We become very habitual. What are the habits of the emotions that you tend to live in and the body? So body specifically, like how do you sit typically? How do you stand typically? What's your posture? How do you move? I think we all know that when we look at other people in life, they move differently than we do, and that can become very habitual. There's a saying even in our culture, humans are creatures of habit. And I think many of us understand it from that language. So when I say creatures of habit, what do I mean? Think about it. Do you drive? In the same way, when you're going somewhere, do you drive the same route over and over? Back when we used to go to offices for work, did you drive to work the same way every day? So much so that some mornings you almost got in your car, you started it, and then all of a sudden you were pulling in the parking lot and you don't realize how you got there. It's like your body drove you there. Your habits drove you there. Where do you tend to sit? Many of us in our homes sit in the same places. I've got my chair. That's my location. We tend to sit by the same people when we're in group settings. We become habitual. Another phrase for this, I think, is we call it, that people understand, is that's our comfort zone. So our habits have us become very comfortable. But how do we build habits? So this is at the essence of my work as an executive coach, because a lot of times we're trying to change old habits, or what I like to, I got this from Stuart Heller, kind of uninstall the old habits. So we want to examine them and then notice the parts that we want to keep or preserve. And then the parts that we want to change, we almost have to put our arm around them, make friends with them first and say, thank you for serving me. And it's time to go so that I can construct a new habit. One fundamental way that you've already heard me mention, what does that mean for human beings? It means we're going to have to take on new learning in order to build new habits. And so I like the simple definition again of learning is time and practice. So that means that over some period of time, I'm going to have to start to practice new ways of thinking and speaking language, new ways of living in certain emotions and moods. That's the emotional circle, and new ways of moving and engaging my body in ways that will start to create learning and a new way of being. So that's what I mean by embodied habits. There's another saying like, be careful what you practice, that's what you become. Okay. And so a few more points about embodied habits. I have found that our habits have great power. Stuart, I think, says this a lot, or at least this is what I've heard from him. In many ways, our habits are choosing, we're not choosing. Our habits are so embodied, entrenched, or ingrained, we've practiced them over and over again, that they're driving us more than we're actually actively paying attention and choosing in that moment. In fact, there's research from a neuroscience standpoint, and many of you have probably heard this, that the more we practice something, the more it becomes a groove or a rut in the synaptic connections of our brains, the more electrical impulses travel down that route over and over again. I almost think of it as grooves or ruts in our brain, in a way that it begins to wire our brain and wire our way of being. And so again, learning or growth or change is rewiring, and we're learning a ton more. And I'm not an expert here, but we're literally learning to rewire our brain. And I wonder, even in this moment, if any sort of significant habit change means we've also rewired our brain. So just some things to think about. What do I mean by our habits have great power? I'll give you another story. I remember back years ago, it was the time when I was in grad school, and I came back and I lived in an apartment on Fairfax for several years while I was in grad school. So my body got used to going and coming from that apartment, driving a certain way, as I mentioned earlier. I then had a friend who was getting married, and he offered for me to live in his condo. And so I moved into his condo. It happened to be one street over on Ackland Avenue. Funny thing happened after I moved into his condo. For a few weeks, this literally happened several times. As I was driving home from somewhere, I drove instead to my old apartment one street over and didn't even realize it. I was pulling into the parking lot and parking when I realized, oh, I don't even live here anymore. So how did that happen? Literally my body, the habits, were choosing the driving instead of me. And so I want you to see that we are very habitual. I think there's so many ways in which our body is driven by habit. Think about it, like you brush your teeth the same way. Have you ever tried brushing your teeth with the opposite hand? It's weird. It's uncomfortable. We shower, we towel off much the same way. They're just a plethora of habits. So I'm asking you to begin to notice, what are your embodied habits? Are they working for you or not working for you? In addition, what I'll say is that if you choose to undergo growth or learning in any area, that change is going to take time and practice. So what I would invite you to do is make sure that you're patient with yourself. Usually we can't change these overnight, especially if it's deeply entrenched and you've been doing it for decades. And in addition, if it's developmentally a medium or difficult change, you're going to have to be patient in your practice. There will be missteps, a couple steps forward, one step back. You may have to redesign some of those practices, but we got to be patient with ourselves. And also, I think in organizational settings, I talk with leaders about if you want your people to change their behavior, you've really got to be patient with them as they go about changing this. And you've got to support them in some manner. Either you support them or find other ways to support them as they go through the process. Because you're really asking them to get out of their comfort zone again and again until the new habit becomes comfortable and replaces that. So the last thing I'll say as it relates to embodied habits is I think many of us stay in situations, relationships, jobs, other situations where we're suffering. We intellectually, logically know we're suffering, but we don't get out because our body is comfortable. Our body knows what it feels like, and it stays there because trying to change that would be too uncomfortable. Sometimes when we do undertake change, initially we don't have a lot of success or we don't do it perfectly, so we retreat back to what is known, the old habit, what's comfortable. In many ways, that change and retreat back is in areas that aren't that significant. But if you think about it, in damaging relationships, jobs where we reside and miserable, when we retreat back, we're continuing to stay in that situation and suffer and trap ourselves. So that's the notion I like to talk about with embodied habits. The last piece in today's podcast I would like to talk about is with regard to the somatic work or body work that I've done with Stuart Heller. As I said already, he's been the most influential coach for me in this area. And so let me tell you how that happened. Back years ago when I was going through Education for Living, which I mentioned on the first podcast, which was where I was exposed to the ontological distinction, they offered a body workshop or a body course. And I took it with Stuart down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And one of the most striking exercises that he had us do that landed on me was he was having all of us as participants walk around in an oval or a circle almost and just keep walking. We were trying to visit different emotions. So remember, language, emotion, body, they're connected. So we were exploring and having fun visiting different emotions. There were a range of different emotions and we were having fun moving in and out of those and experiencing those, like taking on the body of those emotions. And what I noticed for myself was when he asked us to do the emotion of happy, it was really hard for me to access it. And even if I was able to, I couldn't stay there longer than a second or two. It was weird. I was like, wow, why can't I visit happiness? What is going on here? And I remember later in the course, I was sharing with him my experience that all these other emotions I kind of knew, was familiar with, but happiness I couldn't get to. And he coached me. You know, he brought me up in front of the room and he coached me. And what I remember is he basically was like, stand how you normally stand. And I tended to stand with 1 foot back behind me. And I kind of leaned back, as I mentioned to you earlier. And he had me literally just try. He goes, okay, move forward. Bring your chest up. Open your chest up. Put yourself on your front foot. And he said, imagine holding a beach ball. Like your arms are out in front of you and you're holding a beach ball. So I did that, and I'm not kidding. The moment I did that, I was moved forward, chest up, and I held the beach ball. I broke into an immediate smile. It was shocking. It was stunning. So I couldn't help but smile. And I was like, wow, what happened? And then he had me move back again to my typical place. And that happiness went away. It moved. In fact, I remember I settled into sadness, amazingly. And I'll tell you now, we were standing really close when he looked at me and he said, you're not messed up. There's nothing wrong with you. And I literally started to lose it because he tapped into that coherence that I was talking about earlier of that master assessment. There's something wrong with me. And he let me stay there for a minute. And then he said, okay, now move back forward where you were like you're holding the beach ball. And I did, and that sadness went away. It passed, and the happiness started to come back. It was extraordinary, but one of the takeaways I had from it was, oh, this emotion of sadness that I've often visited in my life isn't permanent. It doesn't have to stay there. I can begin to learn how to be more happy, live in happiness more often. It was amazing. And I literally, from that point forward, for a while, was trying to open up my chest and hold myself up more, so much, but I retreated back to what was familiar and comfortable, my old coherence, even within that course, so much so that a few hours later, he looked at me and said, "Hey, Mark, hold your chest up, open your chest up." I had literally just fallen back into that without even noticing. And that became a journey for me over the next few decades, is reshaping my posture in that way. But knowing that I had already spent 27 or 28 years in the other posture, so it was going to take a while. So let me talk to you a little bit about what I realized later was happening. I ended up doing another body course with Stuart years later, and also had him work with me one-on-one on a couple of different occasions over 15 or 20 years. And in the process, I learned what I call, and I think he still calls it, his five rings model. He may call it something different these days, but it essentially is a framework. And the way I like to think about it is, if you've ever hunted and you've had a rifle and you look in a scope, or you look in a binocular scope, there's crosshairs. So that's the phrase I think of. And what is that? It's a circle that's divided by a vertical line and a horizontal line that split them evenly. So you have four quadrants, and then you have where the crosshairs meet, which is the fifth spot. So you can think of them as rings, the five rings model. And the way it works is that, so in the center where the crosshairs are is what he calls, I think, space. I think of it as sort of neutral and center, when your body's in the neutral or center position. Everything to the right of the vertical axis is called forward or front, those two positions. And then behind the vertical axis is back. And if you look at the horizontal axis, everything above is up. Those two positions are up and the other two positions are down. And so the meeting of those four creates different body dispositions. And I won't go into it too deeply today. I just want to give you enough to understand what the work he did with me. But he uses the elements for these. So that top right quadrant, which is forward and up, is called fire. That's fire. The bottom right quadrant, forward and down, is ground. The back and down, bottom left quadrant, is water. And then the back and up position is wind. So you've got fire, water, wind, and ground. You've got the four elements, and then neutral. I love that framework because I can remember that. And so we literally are talking about moving your center of gravity forward or back, and then up or down in your body. So it's sitting, standing, moving with that orientation creates four different body dispositions. And from that, you literally can say or feel different things. Remember the coherence, language, emotion, body. You experience different emotions, and you can say, or you think, or you speak differently from each of those. In fact, I would say whatever disposition you're in, the other ways of feeling and thinking aren't even available. That's the power in a lot of some of the work that I do in my coaching. So what I noticed was, for me, was that the coaching Stuart did for me was, I tended to live in back and down, which is water. And so that takes the shape of kind of a concave body. If you think of the tides come in, they go out. They come in, they go out. So that was great for me. It has interesting emotional states that go with it. The sort of positive version, when you're back and down and do life a lot in that, is you're open. It makes for great listening. It's part of what has made me a great coach, I think. That negative emotion, though, that can show up in that is afraid, is fear. And so that it was a predominant emotion that I lived in a lot in my life with regard to my dad. And so it made sense to me finally. And then when he moved me forward, like I was holding the beach ball, he moved me from lower left, back and down, to upper right, forward and up. That's fire. So he had me be more fiery. And guess what emotions go with fire? The positive, quote unquote, is happiness. And so that's all he did, was move my body there. And all of a sudden, the emotion followed. The quote unquote negative emotion, if you live in that forward and up position, a lot of times is anxiety, is being anxious. And so each of these corresponding body dispositions has a certain state or emotion associated with them. Again, fire, forward and up. So if you're a fiery person, you have access to happiness and anxiety a lot. If you're a back and down person like I was, you have access to openness or fear a lot. If you're back and up, which is wind, you have pretty easy access to being peaceful, or the negative side is more frustration or frustrated. If you're more forward and down in life, you're a grounded person, solid, we would say you have access to the emotions of calm or sad. So if you notice, I mentioned sadness earlier. So I tended to live much of my life in the down body positions, either water or ground. So what did I need in my life? I needed more forward and up. I needed more fire, which quite interestingly, I would say right now was that was my father's disposition, was fiery. And so naturally, I kind of rebelled and went the other way. And that's something I want you to think about is when we look at that framework. By the way, the central, the crosshairs where they meet, of space kind of has the disposition of I'm satisfied in life, or the quote-unquote negative version of that is needy. So again, each of these dispositions has a positive valence or a negative valence to it, which represents certain states or emotional states. And so what tends to happen, actually, I think, and Stuart might come on here and tell me differently, but is we tend to predominantly take on one body disposition, and we often have a deficit of the one that's across from it. So water often has a deficit of fire. Fire often has a deficit of water. Wind, a lot of wind often has a deficit of ground, needs to be grounded. And people that are very grounded need to have more wind or flexibility in their life, which makes sense, right? If you're a very grounded and solid person, what that means in life is you may become too rigid, too structured, too attached to rules. And you need more openness and flexibility in your life. For me, with the water, I was like open, great listener, open to all points of views and perspectives, but I had trouble choosing and moving forward quickly, which is fire. Okay? So I hope this framework makes sense. The last piece I'll give you, I wasn't planning on going quite this deep with this framework, but I'll give you one more piece, which is like fire is persuasion. It's determination, it's resolution. When we need that in life, you have to go to the body of forward and up or fire. Ground, forward and down, is more stability. If you want to take a king or queen position, that's where your power lives in life. Then you'll need more ground. And you've seen this with people who are fluttering all over the place, flexible, windy. They need to be grounded and tethered more. Actually, I'll say this about water. It is more the position of openness. It's also called the lover archetype, really good for listening and connecting with people. And then the wind is more flexibility. It's also the archetype is the joker, and it's really great for brainstorming. And if you think about it, many of us intuitively do that when we're brainstorming. We move around, we go back and up, our head lifts up, we're looking up at the sky, like what's possible. That's the natural flexibility. So again, many of us tend to settle into one over life. That's our habitual coherence. And we probably need more of the others in our life that can help us be more agile and to meet the demands of our life. So the last piece I'll say around that is just, you know, I've been working to reshape my posture now for 3+ decades, had success as I've learned and grown. But I think in the last 3 years in particular, I've had a lot of success of opening my chest up more and standing out. I'll give shout outs to my trainer, Josh Lee, here in Nashville, who's really helped me strengthen my core, my upper body, and especially my back muscles in a way that my chest can be more open and I can access happiness, the emotion of happiness more, and the moods of optimism and ambition and excitement. So I hope that makes sense, at least for now, as we move into this territory. So to close for today, what did we talk about? A summary, like, we talked about the temporary coherence of language, emotion, body versus the habitual. And the habitual is often the one where we feel stuck, and that's where we often want growth. We talked about embodied habits, how powerful they are, how deeply entrenched they can become through time and practice. And like they almost drive us at times. We make choices we realize we shouldn't, But have some grace with yourself, because that might be a deeply embodied habit. It takes time to change. And then we talked about the five rings piece in my work with Stuart, but gave you a little bit of a framework to think about: fire, water, wind, ground, and space, to begin noticing yourself. So to close for today, your homework, as it seems to be I'm tending to ask you to do now, is still first and foremost, start to notice your body. Start to notice, what are the entrenched habits you see about yourself as you move through your day that work for you? And which ones are the ones that you've been trying to change or want to change that you haven't had much success for some time? Maybe I've given you a new way to look at them and see them and how you might go about changing them. And so begin to notice those habits, and just as, again, as non-judgmentally as can, just notice and go, oh, that's working for me, or that's not working for me. And perhaps in later episodes, we'll go deeper and get into kind of breaking this down a little bit more. But your homework for now is notice your body. And if you so choose, you notice something, try shifting. Try sitting differently, standing differently, moving differently in the world, acting differently. Drive a different route to your favorite restaurant. Hang out with different people. Move out of your comfort zone. Engage your body in a more powerful way and see what happens. So that's it, everybody. That's episode 5, The Body, of Wake Up and Pay Attention. I wish you the best over the next week or so. I hope you're well, and we will talk again very soon. Well, my friends, that's a wrap for today. I'm so grateful you joined me, and hope you feel energized by the insights we took a deeper look at together. If anything resonated with you or inspired new thinking, drop me a note. I'd love to hear your biggest takeaway. Please join me next time as we dive deeper into this never-ending journey of self-discovery. Until then, be well, be present, live fully and authentically, wake up and pay attention.